Okay, things are about to get weird. You've fallen afoul of the Loot Mechanics podcast. For the next half hour or so, your hosts will prattle on about games and such, as that is just what they do. Because they are really old geeks. And now they're going to take that out on all of you. Anyway, here's your tormentors. Hosts. Fearless and Scormy.
Hey there, everybody. Welcome back to the show and happy holidays. I'm Scormus.
And I'm Bayless.
And I'm Ken.
Hey, sweetie.
Merry Christmas.
And Merry Christmas to you.
Bah, humbug.
So, it's a Christmas Day when this show's coming out, although we're recording it 19 days early because I like having time off for the holidays. Thank you very much. What's everybody doing for their holidays?
Sleeping.
Not a whole lot.
You guys are exciting.
Not much you can do right now.
Sure. I have to work on Christmas, so, you know, woohoo. But I get double time and a half for it, so. Oh, yeah, and they feed us, too, although I never eat their food.
Hospital food, yuck.
You know, it's not so much that. It's more of a, I have to leave my office, go all the way down there to their cafeteria, which is quite a little distance, and then wait in line, and then sign a thing saying, yes, I really am an employee, because nobody ever sees me, because I'm off in my little box all the time. Get my food, get my pie and whatever snacks they have for us, go back, walk back to my office, and by the time I get back there, everything's cold. So what's the point?
No point. Free food.
That's what my coworkers say. Well, it's free food. You know what? I bring a lunch, and my sweetie sitting right over here makes me some very nice vittles, especially for holidays.
Okay.
I'm sure it'll be quite good. It always is.
Your idea good, my idea good, completely different.
See what I have to deal with anyway. Shall we go ahead and jump on with the best games of 2020?
Sure.
The main topic.
Oh, Bielis, would you care to talk a little bit about your choice for your best video game of 2020?
Sure. Now, that being said, this is also a game that has not come out yet, but I can guarantee that it's going to be best of the year just because of what it is. And that, of course, is Cyberpunk 2077.
Yeah. When people are listening to this, it has likely come out.
Well, yes. But when we're recording it, it has not, so I have not had my hands on it yet. So, I think it looks amazing. And, of course, it's one of my favorite gaming systems, and just looking forward to playing it. If you don't know anything about it, where the hell have you been? It is a open-world adventure role-playing game set in Night City. And if you know anything about Cyberpunk, it's a very dystopian universe. You know, corporations rule everything. The police are nothing more than stooges to the corporations, and you're a person who works in the shadow. You do mostly illegal activities just to survive and get wealthy. Would you think that's a fairly accurate assessment?
Absolutely. I mean, Cyberpunk is its own genre in movies, novels, video games, role-playing games, all that.
Mm-hmm.
And this is based off of the tabletop role-playing series, Cyberpunk 2013, 2020, and so on. So it has its heart in like the core of cyberpunk gaming for the last 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I'm going to say it's pretty solid there.
But what I think is nice is the graphics are absolutely beautiful. I mean, it's as close to photorealistic as I've seen. But the hacking, because you've got characters who can hack into computers to get, access to corporate secrets or to open security doors or turn off security cameras, that sort of thing. It's a lot cleaner than any video or any of the game systems I've ever run across for hacking ever have had. It doesn't look like it's going to take you out of the game like it usually does to break your immersion, that sort of thing.
It's nice, because that's always been a problem with at least the tabletop games, is if you had somebody that was a netrunner, they effectively ended up, for the large portions of the game, ended up playing a completely separate game from everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
While they'd be in meat space, the netrunner would be jacked into the Matrix or whatever you want to call it, depending on the game, and playing a completely different game, unless everybody's playing netrunners. So, yeah.
But yeah,
I don't know. Do you know anything about Cyberpunk 2077, Ken?
No.
Haven't seen anything about it at all?
No.
Not even that Keanu Reeves is actually in it.
Yeah, I saw that, but it's like, okay.
Again, you're not so much a computer video game player, so.
Nope.
We'll get more into that in a bit. But it does look quite good. And it would have been a game I would have considered heavily for my pick as well, but.
Well, that and the fact it's being done by CD Projekt Red.
Sure.
They have had many good games that they've brought out. So.
Yeah, the Witcher series.
Oh, yeah.
If it's at least as good as Witcher 3 Wild Hunt,
mm-hmm.
It'll be fantastic.
Which, again, was another best of the year game.
Yeah. So.
So they've got a lot of prospects, and I think it's going to basically roll over everything else.
Now, for our picks, I'm pretty sure Ten agrees with me on this choice. It's their favorite game right now. For our best game of 2020, we picked Animal Crossing New Horizons.
It's my only game right now.
I know there's a lot of people that think of it as grindy. And
that'd be me.
There's a lot of people who don't even think it's really a game. But
well, it's a game.
It was the game we needed, that the world needed this year. In any other year, in any other situation, this would have been, oh, look, it's an Animal Crossing game. And it would have come and gone. It would have had its little popularity, and then it would have gone off and whatever. Sure, it's fun in its own way, but it would have been just another Animal Crossing game. But New Horizons came out right when people were being told they had to stay home. All the stay-at-home orders were out, and there was a lot of fear and hoarding, and people were pretty much starting to panic about COVID-19. And then this came out pretty much at the same time as Doom Eternal. Both were big hits, but Doom Eternal kind of just fell off the wayside like every other game, it got replaced by other ones. Meanwhile, Animal Crossing New Horizons has remained at the top of the sales charts week after week after week, all year long. It may not be number one every week, but it's right up there every week, and it's what's been driving Switch sales week after week after week. Hell, when the Xbox Series X and PlayStation 5 came out in November, they jumped to the top of the sales charts for consoles for a week, and then the Switch was back on top, to a large degree driven by people stuck at home wanting just some stupid fun to keep them distracted. And what's stupid fun that's keeping them distracted?
Animal Crossing New Horizons.
Exactly. That makes it game of the year. At least in my mind.
Mine too.
Do you have any thoughts, Bielis?
It's so much like so many other games that it's hard to get hooked by it, because there are things that it does that are different, but most everything is so similar to my time at Portia or Stardew Valley or any of these other games of the same kind of setup. But things like Stardew Valley and my time at Portia have a much more, you can carry on relationships so much better in those games than you can with this one. This one is just really lackluster, in my opinion.
Well, also, in New Horizons' defense, those other games have been out longer and have had more time to be developed. And as I said, Animal Crossing was the game that came out at just the right time. If any other social simulation game had come out at that point, it may have been the one that caught everyone's attention instead of New Horizons. But people needed something relatively simple, casual, and easy to play that they can just jump on and just go. And it's a good time waster.
Are you sure that's what it was?
I think we can all agree. Animal Crossing is a great time waster. I know, Ken, you've spent all day just sitting there going from Mystery Island to Mystery Island to Mystery Island.
Not all day.
Okay.
And not every day am I on there for long periods of time either. But it's enough to distract me from the stuff that goes on in the neighborhood to where I don't want to kill my neighbors.
Crossing, preventing homicide.
Yes.
Here now.
I didn't say it was an everyday thing, and I didn't say you were on for like 12 hours a day all the time. I'm just saying, especially early on, it was the sort of thing you could jump on and just go. And there were times where you did just play for hours and hours.
Yeah, it's usually when I'm in island terraforming mode that I end up playing for hours. I like the fact that you can terraform your world. That's cool.
It is nice.
As for some of the other games that are similar, I prefer Animal Crossing's look. For some reason, I don't know why, it's easier for me to get hooked into versus, say, Stardew Valley.
You did kind of like that one, Graveyard Keeper.
I find Graveyard Keeper was frustrating me. The controls were a little more frustrating to me than Animal Crossing. So
true. I don't like it nearly as much as Animal Crossing personally, but it has its charm. And now I can't really speak to that, my time at Portia, because I literally just bought that. I have not even played it yet. So
It has an interesting crafting system, and its relationship system is fairly robust, considering, you know, the other games of its ilk. I also like its combat.
Yeah, that's one thing that you don't have in Animal Crossing, is you don't have combat. But that's also part of its appeal, because people want something that is not stressful. And there's nothing stressful about Animal Crossing.
I beg to differ. There is the stress of trying to catch something that's swimming really fast.
Okay. Granted. But you know what I do? When something goes zipping away from me, I just don't chase it. Because I know that's going to bother me. So I'll just go, oh, yeah, that's too fast. Screw it. I don't need it. I'll go find something else. Oh, look, there's bubbles over there. I'll go get those.
Why don't you just corral it into a corner?
Because it's not that important.
That's what I do, is I drive it into a corner.
They slow down for a second, and then they turn around, and you can catch them.
Yeah, sure, and I've caught them. It's not like I need them. It's more of a, hey, look, it's yet another one that's worth a bunch of money, or I can go catch three things that combined will be worth the same amount. And they're like, swim over, dive, catch, move on, swim over, dive, catch, with no stress.
Yes, but if you're going to catch all those things for your museum, you got to...
I've already done that. That's why I said, I don't need them. It's literally is not important. So when they go, I go, fuck it, and go the other way.
It helps that he has me playing to catch the ones that he doesn't want to catch.
She can have the stress. I've got work. I work at a hospital. Fuck all y'all. I don't need the stress. Just saying.
Mm-hmm.
Anywho, we still have best role-playing games to talk about. And since you went first for video games, can I go first for role-playing games?
Are you asking?
Well, I'm asking you because I'm being polite.
Sure.
Okay. Well, I hold in my, hands a rather wonderful tome, beautiful quality printing and whatnot, but that's not the important part. Of course, the important part is what the game is. And this is a little game called Vaesen. It's Nordic horror role-playing.
No, thank you.
Oh, trust me. If I ran this, you would like this.
There's a word in there that I don't like. Horror. No, thank you.
Well, you like you some Call of Cthulhu, right?
Begrudgingly.
Okay, so Vaesen is kind of reminiscent of Call of Cthulhu, because it's focused around investigators, and it's not set in the modern day. It's set in the 19th century, like early to mid 1800s. It can be really anywhere in the 1800s, but it depends on where you want it to be. There can be elements from the late 19th century, from the early 19th century. It's not really set in stone, like Call of Cthulhu tends to be 20s and 30s, 1920s and 30s. But like I said, it's Nordic. It's set in Scandinavia, specifically Sweden. But you can go all over. You're dealing with a lot of dark fae and trolls and just creatures out of Scandinavian folklore. So it's, you don't have the Lovecraftian horror, but it's more your investigations are to try and find how do you deal with this particular being. And sure, there's creatures that are, standard examples from folklore, but it gives you rules for creating your own creatures so that you can, oh, everybody at the group has read the book. They know all the monsters. You don't know the ones I'm creating, though. So sit on that and spin, you freaking metagamers. But this uses the Year Zero engine, which was popularized with Mutant Year Zero. It's a very popular game in Europe. In fact, it's been described as the D&D of Europe. And so it's well-tested rules, plays like a dream. But what's more important is it's got kind of a feel beyond Call of Cthulhu of a game I used to really enjoy, but the system sucked for, called Chill, which is a horror role-playing game from the 80s that had the setting, it was just charming as hell, because you played members of effectively a secret society fighting against the horrors in the dark. Vaisen is like that. You're fighting against the Vaisen, which are these creatures of Scandinavian folklore trying to protect mankind. But sometimes you don't want to harm the Vaisen because maybe they were driven to their actions, actions against humanity by being, a bigger, more dangerous Vaisen. Drove them to it. Maybe they were driven out of their territory, out of their dark forest, by something else that invaded. So they had to go into this farmer's barn and killed off all the sheep. Whatever, you know? So you find out, oh, maybe this thing caused the problem, but really, it isn't the problem. You need to just clear out the big nasty so that thing can go back. It doesn't want to mess with the farmer's sheep. It just needed to survive. So it's that sort of gameplay. You've got that heavy emphasis on investigation, on research, but it also has some tinges of combat. And since you're part of this secret society, well, what they call the society, when you're joining up, it had collapsed several years before due to infighting. And so you're basically given the keys to this large castle, which is your base of operations. And you're supposed to be more characters and whatnot. You're supposed to build up this base by hiring effectively NPCs. And you can bring in different characters to swap in and out if you like, that are all based out of this place. And while you're leveling up, you're also leveling up your base, which adds bonuses to your group. The better your base is, the more opportunities you have for, oh no, you got injured during a fight. Well, no problem, as long as you can get back to the base. You invested last time in a place where you could get some healing done. You have a doctor or nurses there who can fix you up. So it makes it easier for you to heal, things like that. So while you're leveling up your characters and you're leveling up your group, you're also earning experience to level up your base, which is kind of a core in the Year Zero rules. So I got to say, this is an amazing game, and I really look forward to running this for people.
Okay.
Plus, the book is gorgeous. Anywho, Bealis, did you have a choice for?
Well, yeah, actually. And staying with the same theme, it's Cyberpunk Red.
Woohoo.
Well, I'm a huge fan of the Cyberpunk game. And this one is set in 2045, if I remember right. And it takes place just after the fourth corporate war. So it's basically everything that was shit before is now even worse because the war is over, but everything's destroyed and you're trying to rebuild from that.
Yeah.
But it's the same kind of thing. You know, you've still got, you know, corporations are still in charge. There's, you know, the world's broken, but the dregs are still there and you're getting by any way you can. The reason it's called Cyberpunk Red is because the skies are colored red because the nuclear dust.
Yeah, because...
Oh, go ahead.
I don't remember the exact date, but it was... Because the previous version of Cyberpunk was in 2020.
Right. So
it was a few years after that when somebody set off a pocket nuke in the center of Night City. And so the center of town is an irradiated wasteland, but everything else... Oh. So, for the last 20 years has basically been rebuilt, but there's the government has basically put their foot down on the corporations and said, this needs to stop. And they effectively took Militech and grabbed them by the neck and said, you are going to stop this. Sorry. This was like my third choice for the year. I'm holding my own copy of Cyberpunk Red, and it's very pretty, uh-huh. And I love it. You want to take a look at it, sweetie?
It is a big, heavy tome. Great game. I'm looking forward to playing. And considering how many games are out there, to see one that I want to play more than the rest, that's saying something.
Well, also, there weren't a whole lot of releases this year for, you know, major RPG releases.
Well, and most of them, when they call it a quote-unquote new game, it's nothing more than it's just an accessory to a pre-existing game. Because I was just going to say, the list that I was looking at, they're like, okay, hey, D&D, Explorer's Guide to Wildemount, D&D, yeah. Prime of the Frostmaiden, blah, 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 blah. It's like, come on, really? Those aren't games?
No.
Oh, well.
I'm pretty sure Ten has claimed our copy of Cyberpunk Red.
Well, out of the two books that have been discussed, yeah, I think I prefer to play this one. But I'm not saying that the one that you recommended doesn't sound interesting. It does, but I'm not a big fan of horror.
I know.
And as for my opinions, I have none.
Okay. Well, just one thing I liked about Cyberpunk Red is it's familiar to anybody who played Cyberpunk 2020. I mean, the core stuff is all there. But the changes they made are really nice. I mean, like the new way of making a character. Sure, you can do it the old quick and dirty way. There was the quick and dirty, and there was the detailed. Well, they added in an even simpler version to make a character. So you can basically sit down, slap out some numbers, and have a character made in a couple minutes. That's including with Life Path, which they expanded the Life Path this time. So it can be super simple to spending a couple hours making a character, however you like it. And it's just in a big old hardbound tome. So, yeah, nifty. I like.
Well, I'm glad you approve. Figured you would.
That's because he's a slut.
I am a horrible, horrible tabletop slut. I know.
The main topic.
So, folks, here we have it. We're to our worst games of 2020 section. And there was much rejoicing.
Yay!
Yay!
I know. Now, not the best choices this year, but we're doing the best we can with what we got, and we'll explain. Kind of reversing it, shall we start with a tabletop?
Sure.
Okay, what's your worst tabletop RPG of the year?
Well, I don't want to say it's worst, because there's a lot of people who are, I mean, they're excited for this game. It was, I mean, it funded in under 3 hours on Kickstarter, but it's Haunted West. And the only reason I'm picking it as my worst is because out of all of the games that came out this year, this is the one I'm least likely to play. It just doesn't do it for me. But what it is it's a historical fiction, weird Western spaghetti type game. You know, spaghetti Western kind of game.
Okay.
You can play it as a, you know, ultra-violent, you know, tombstone kind of adventure, or you can play it as kind of a, I wish I could remember the name of it, but where it's kind of like a supernatural Western kind of thing with aliens and the skinwalkers, the, you know, what am I thinking of? Bigfoot, that sort of thing.
Okay.
The white buffalo and all those things could be, you know, real. But the thing that I thought was interesting, though, is it's bringing up something that almost happened in real life history, where the lands were United States lands were divided, and parts of it were given out to enslaved people. And that was actually something that we thought about doing in our history, but it didn't happen. Well, in this game, it does happen. And so the balance of power shifts radically because of this. So, like I said, you can go Pulp Fiction kind of thing, or you can go, I don't know if you ever read the comic book Weird West.
No.
You can do all kinds of things like that. That's where Jonah Hex came from, was the Weird West tales.
Okay. Yeah, I did like Jonah Hex, the comic anyway. The movie? Not so much.
Well, but it's kind of like Ghost Rider. The comics are great, but they made movies, and the people who made them had no idea what made them interesting. So they just butchered them.
You're describing this Haunted West, right?
Yes.
And I don't really know anything about it, obviously, but you're describing it. I'm like, don't we already have this? There's been this long established game, tabletop role-playing game. It's been around for years. That is well-beloved. Deadlands. It does the exact same thing. So what the fuck is this useful for?
Well, maybe you should ask Chris Spivey. He's the one who designed it.
Who?
Chris Spivey, S-P-I-V-E-Y. He made the Cthulhu RPG Harlem Unbound, which was kind of a weird game in and of itself, because they've got, it's based on, you know, they've got this African-American protagonist set in a Cthulian type game, which is kind of in defiance of H.P. Lovecraft, who was a racist.
Okay.
That's just, you know,
great, but it's still basically ripping off Deadlands. So,
yeah.
Yeah, it's just a big old wah, wah, wah for me.
Like I said, it doesn't look like something I'd really want to play.
Obviously, a lot of people are quite excited about it, so.
And I hope they enjoy the hell out of it.
Yeah.
So what about you?
Well, as for me, I'm sitting here, and I have my copy of this tome right here in my hand. See, the list I was looking at for tabletop role-playing games that came out in 2020 was rather small, and the stuff that came out this year tended to be of actual full games, tended to all be pretty good. There were some pretty quality games that came out this year. And Although this game is a good game, it's the least of them. And this is a Chris McDowell's Electric Bastion Land. Now, it's a very unique game. Do you know anything about Into the Odd?
No.
Never heard of it.
Okay, well, that's a game that Chris McDowell designed that was quite popular in certain circles. This is kind of an expansion upon that. It's delves deeper into that world. This is kind of feels steampunk without being steampunk. It's kind of set in an alternate 1930s where the world just keeps being built up on top of old ruins, and you play a character that, instead of choosing a class, you have a failed career. So maybe you were, let's just roll and grab randomly out of here. Maybe you were trench conscript. So you were basically a draftee in a war, but you didn't do very well at that. You managed to survive, but you basically got out of it, learned to basically, you got a trench gun. Run? Words are really hard today. Trench gun. Then you basically get to choose what your role was in the unit, which helps determine another set of gear you have. And then what you found in a particular tunnel, which helps determine a little bit more about your character. Like, say, maybe you found a bonding dome. Any being that wears this head device is bombarded with flashing images and emerges spluttering. They emotionally bond with the next being they see and dedicate their life to them until their next sleep. So, okay. That's not super useful. But point is, you use this as a starting point, and what you do is, since basically you and your group are all failures at your previous career, all that's left to you is to explore ruins to try and find relics and bring them back to earn money to pay off this massive freaking debt you have to some faction in the game. And they expect to get paid and will extract the money one way or another from you. So yeah, they're kind of like loan sharks, only potentially much, much worse. And you determine which group it is that you owe money by the youngest character in the group, whichever one that person that is, it's determined off of their failed career. So it's a unique and interesting idea, but I was going to run this for my solo actual play podcast, and after looking it over, I went, anyway, and chose to do something different instead. It's not that it's a bad game. It's just a game I don't care about. So yeah, I backed it on Kickstarter, and I'm glad I have it, but I'm pretty sure it's gonna be one of those games that just sits on my shelf for the next decade.
Like 99% of your games?
Yeah.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. But like I said, apparently it was a really good year for tabletop role-playing games. What few ones major releases actually came out. But this one is easily bottom of the stack. And I know there's going to be a lot of people that love Into the Odd and love Electric Bastion Land. I don't, and I consider it a waste of my money. Just saying. So, shall we jump on over to the worst video games?
Sure.
Okay. Would you care to go first?
I can.
Cool.
This is one I purchased from Steam not too long ago, and within a very short period of time, turned around and got a rebate.
Wow.
There's, according to my Metacritic, it's got a 61, which isn't, you know, great, but it isn't horrible either. It's just, I was expecting more. Everything I saw on it looked like it was this, you know, great, amazing, old school dungeon delver like all the wizardries before it. But it seemed like nothing more than just a mobile port.
Well, first of all, what game are we talking about?
Oh, sorry, Wizardry, Labyrinth of Lost Souls. I'm a big fan of the early Wizardry games, you know, the ones where you used to, you'd be playing the game and you'd have somebody right next to you making the map. And, you know, I like those old dungeon delving games, and I really liked Wizardry 8. But this came out and it's just, wow, this is a horrible piece of crap. The graphics were abysmal. The gameplay was terrible. There was no idea what you're supposed to do other than walk into this little dungeon. You take a step, boom, you're dead.
Wow.
Okay. One of those things could kill me, but 10 of them? That's a bit much. So you spend another 45 minutes trying to, you know, find a way to level up or find somebody to join your group so you've got a little better chance. Nope, can't do that. Can't do this. You can't do that. That's not allowed. You know what? I'm done. This isn't fun. So I got out of it quick. There are a lot of games out there that could have been worst, but this is one that made me regret spending money on it immediately.
I don't have a huge amount of experience with the Wizardry games. I've tried one, I think it was on the original Nintendo Entertainment System, mm-hmm. if I remember right.
Yeah, it was probably the Wizardry one.
It's like, okay. It's kind of brutal, but yeah. Not my sort of game, but whatever. And I think I did try Wizardry Online when they decided, let's make an MMO that is permadeath in an MMO, which is a really bad fucking idea. No wonder the game went under quickly.
Yeah.
Wizardry games tend not to be very good.
Well, and that's why I was really hopeful for this one, because, like I said, Wizardry 8 has its share of bugs and broken things about it, but usually you can get past that. And it was a lot of fun. But this stinks on ice.
Wow. Well, I'll take that as a warning, then.
Don't bother. It's not worth it.
Now, the game I chose for worst game of the year, I'm not even sure people remember.
That's sad.
I mean, sure, it came out 10 years ago at the start of 2020, but it was a big game, big splash. It was supposed to be this massive, huge thing. Everyone was looking forward to it, and basically, it missed the pond completely and splatted on the beach. So much so that people were getting, Blizzard was giving immediate refunds because so many people hated it. Effectively, Blizzard said, we're doing this, and then completely lied to their player base and did something completely different. And maybe that's a reminder of what exactly we're talking about. Because we're talking about Warcraft 3 Reforged.
Yeah.
Which might as well have been called Warcraft 3 Refuse.
Yeah. It was terrible.
when you take a game that is beloved, that is still had a long-term set of fans who were still playing Warcraft 3, even now, years and years and years after it had come out, and you tell them, we're going to do a complete reforging of it, and you're going to get HD cutscenes, you're going to get all this new stuff. It's not just going to be an upscaling of what's in there. We're going to redo all the graphics. We're going to redo the gameplay. It's going to be so great. You're going to love this. And they even showed off a cutscene that had been completely redone. And people were like, oh my God, they took what was in the original and made them fully cinematic cutscenes, just like you find in World of Warcraft. And people were so excited by this. They were looking so forward to it. And then they basically, they just literally upscaled the original graphics and the original cutscenes. Mm-hmm. They didn't change shit.
Yes, but that's not the worst part.
No.
No, they made it so now to play the original, you have to go online only, and the update that you had to download to do it broke your game.
Yeah. So the entire community that was playing Warcraft 3, the original,
can't play it anymore.
They broke their game.
So you have to play their version of it, or don't play at all.
Right. And their reforged version is a buggy mess.
Mm-hmm. I don't think it's been fixed yet.
It is a downgrade, a significant downgrade over Warcraft 3, the original. Uh-huh. And they unapologetically, they played this little, that was unintended, and then didn't fix it.
Why should they? They're Blizzard. They do whatever the hell they want.
They could have just said, okay, this is disconnected. They could have just, completely unconnected the original from this new version. But instead, somehow, they made it to where it ruined all those old versions and screwed their community to the point where nobody wants to play Warcraft 3 now. That was the most Activision thing Blizzard has ever done. And they've done a lot of stupid shit, but that was literally the worst. I've never seen Blizzard be absolutely evil until this. So yeah, worst game of the year. It isn't even close, in my opinion. Sure, I know it's gotten good reviews, and people said, it's been cleaned up a lot. And hey, yeah, it's not that bad of a game now. It's still Warcraft 3 Reforged. And to my knowledge, they've never fixed the original. It's still not got the cinematic cutscenes they promised. And it's still just an upscaled mess. It's still a big ass fucking fraud. And it always will be.
But that's Blizzard for you.
Yeah. And this is exactly why I remember when people used to say, hey, if it's a Blizzard game, you can trust it. Because Blizzard, they don't release a game until it's ready. My phone deciding to talk to me. But they used to be, it'll be ready when it's ready. And this was the exact opposite of that. They pushed out a game that was completely not ready, that was full of bugs, that wasn't what was promised. They basically took people's money and said, here, we lied to you. This is what you get. And then when people freaked the hell out, and it had, for a time, the lowest Metacritic user score in history. I don't know if it still does. but it did have the lowest Metacritic score in history. And so Blizzard went, oh no, maybe we should start giving refunds to people who demand them, because we did kind of defraud them, and people could prove, hey, you said this and you gave us this, you took our money and gave us exactly what you said you wouldn't give us. You lied. It's a fraud. Give me my cash back. And then they can't even go back to their old game because it's still broke. Like I said, Blizzard, evil.
Well, I wouldn't say evil. Activision, evil. Blizzard, stupid.
Okay, combine the two and you have Dr. Evil. They're a Bond villain and they're not very good at it. I'm just saying. I mean, the whole thing, just, I mean, I'm sure there are worse games out there. I'm sure. I mean, I was looking at the Metacritic scores, and there was a lot of games that were ranked way lower for 2020 than Warcraft 3. But that doesn't matter, because maybe those games were technically worse, or people didn't like them, or maybe they, you know, whatever. Maybe the critics didn't like them as much, because I was looking at the Metacritic score, not the user scores. So that's fine. Critics are wrong quite often.
Oh, yeah.
What Blizzard, what Activision Blizzard did with Warcraft 3 and what they have failed to rectify all this time, because this came out in early in the year.
Mm-hmm.
They've had all year to fix this. And other than throwing out some refunds, but not fixing the original game, other than that, they've literally just maybe some bug fixes and, you know what? They just cut it loose because, well, you know, that was a failure. Moving on. And I'm sorry, that's not acceptable. Much like I said Animal Crossing was the best game of the year, for the time, for the year, it's the exact opposite with Warcraft 3. If they'd done it right, it could have been a big, huge game, because it's a good way to waste time. Real-time strategy games are a great way for wasting time, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in 2020, especially for hardcore gamers, it would have been a game that absolutely would have grabbed their attention. They would have been all over it. Nope. Because Activision's evil and Blizzard is evil and stupid.
Well, Blizzard would rather concentrate their energies on what's making them money right now.
Sure.
You know, World of Warcraft, Classic Warcraft, Diablo 3. They hyped the holy hell out of Diablo 4, and I'm not interested.
Not after Diablo 3. But here's the thing. They were hyping the hell out of Warcraft 3 as well. And they would have been able to monetize the hell out of that if they hadn't have rushed it out and if they'd actually given people the product that they promised.
But they've got Activision telling them, we need money now.
Right.
So put it out now.
Yeah, you know what? The argument that they're just beholden to Activision, I'm sorry, that's not going to fly anymore. Blizzard makes plenty of money.
You're cutting out.
Okay. Well, Blizzard makes plenty of money, and while Activision may be technically, you know, the bigger brother in this conversation, that's, I don't know, they can't just keep throwing out, well, Activision made us do it. No, sorry. They made a choice, and they fucked over the Warcraft community.
Well, I agree. They completely screwed the pooch on it.
There was a time when Blizzard would have told, like Vivendi, when they were under Vivendi, if Vivendi had said, hey, you need to get this out now, they would have said, fuck you, we're Blizzard. No, we'll get it out when it's done. And I think that's part of why they got split off with merged with Activision and split off by Vivendi, because they could have just split off Activision. But no. We're tired of Blizzard. Send them out with Activision. Fuck it. I mean, maybe that's not what happened, but it seems reasonable to me. Vivendi was sick of their shit, so they took the buyout. But yeah, no, I'm just, that was a full year ago almost, and it still pisses me off, and I didn't even buy the game.
Well, my wife is a huge fan of Warcraft 3, and she did one really smart thing. When it came out, she goes, well, let's give it a few months before we buy it.
Mm-hmm.
See what it's like. Oh, she's glad she did.
Oh, I bet. But it still broke her old version of Warcraft 3.
But she's not playing that right now, so she hasn't actually had to attach it to anything. So yeah. It's not broken yet, but she can't really play it, though.
Right. She can't play it online unless she connects it up to their service. And that's what breaks it. So it's like, you know what? That's just... Anyway, so yeah. Shall we move on?
Sounds good to me.
In conclusion.
Okay, so enough bitching. Does anybody have any final thoughts for today's episode?
Well, I'd have to put more effort into Animal Crossing, apparently, because there's a lot of things that you guys are doing that I don't have access to yet.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot to do. I mean, it's literally where a lot of games measure themselves in, oh, this one you can play in 20 hours. This one you can play in 80 hours and complete it. This is a game that takes months of play, especially if you don't have anyone helping you. Luckily, literally, I had 10 funneling me money to pay off fixing my house and upgrading it.
Had.
Well, now I don't need that. Once you hit a certain point and you're not dumping money on your house, and money is not that hard to come by anymore. So it's the house upgrades that are the big problem. Mostly because you need it for the storage. But anyway, so Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays.
Yes, Happy Yule.
Yes, Happy Yule. Try not to, let Krampus get you. Hey, you know, when we're recording this, Krampus knocked just past, so.
True.
We're big fans of Krampus around here. I have a little Krampus decoration hanging behind my recliner, right next to my handmade accorded neutral territory sign.
It's fitting.
Yes, I'm a big Dresden Files fan. So, anyway, I guess we'll close it there. Till next year, actually. I'm Scormus.
I'm Bales.
And I'm Ten.
Generic catchphrase ending?
So, you actually made it through the whole episode. I'm guessing you either fell asleep, or it was simply morbid curiosity that helped you power through the whole show. Anyway, I'm contractually obligated to let you know about all of the Loot Mechanics' other content over at schoolme.com. They have a blog, podcast, and a Discord server for staying in touch with their community. But hey, unlike this podcast, at least the website doesn't entirely suck.